Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery Country, I'm Lixidam Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, smoking rates have fallen to historic lows, but new data out today shows the challenge ahead on the illicit tobacco trade. We're going to dive into the data and also hear from the federal government. Then, convicted criminal, anti-Muslim, anti-migration activist Tommy Robinson releases his conversation with One Nation leader Pauline Hanson, featuring some extraordinary comments from the Australian senator.
It's explicitly racialised, Tommy Robinson listing several nationalities, and then Pauline Hanson suggesting that the problems with migration began specifically with the repeal of the White Australia policy. But then she broadly goes on to speak about welfare and discussing with Robinson the percentage of Australians who are of Muslim origin, whether that number might be growing in the upcoming census. So again, extremely incendiary comments. I'd suggest going even further in a way, the suggestion that there were no good Muslims.
Well, Tom Crowley has given it a listen, so you don't have to. His analysis is coming up on The Breakfast Wrap. So Australians are smoking less than 20 years ago, but they're using other nicotine products, like nicotine pouches, a heck of a lot more. And one in three people who do smoke are using illicit tobacco. That's according to new survey data released today by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. Also today, the federal government is announcing a ban on nicotine pouches as it works to shut down more of the illicit trade. Before we hear from the federal government, we interviewed Laura Hunter. She is the CEO of the Australian Council on Smoking and Health. And here's a snippet of what she told Sally Sarah this morning.
What we know is fewer Australians are smoking every day. And in fact, if you want to humanise the figure of 5.6%, that is 500,000 fewer smokers than we had 3 years ago. And the data also shows that young people are vaping less, which is such good news. But there is a warning sign. What we're seeing is a changing illicit nicotine market, and more people who are using these products are using multiple forms of tobacco and nicotine at the same time. And we know that these illicit nicotine products are potently high in nicotine. So even one vape can contain the nicotine equivalent of 9 packets of cigarettes. So we're incredibly concerned about that.
Does the data show the government has been able to chip away at the illicit market at all? Do we know much more about that?
It shows from the data in this survey that the, you know, people purchasing illicit products has doubled, which is a huge concern. The government is very aware of that, and we've been pushing for more investment from the federal government to fund the states and territories and support their enforcement efforts, and that's happening. There are agreements being set up at the moment with states and territories to see that facilitated. There's a lot to do in this space to crack down on the illegal market. These stores are trading in open market, you know, and what we're seeing is young people are accessing all of these nicotine products from bricks and mortar stores. That's where they're getting them. And if we can shut them down, that's going to make a really big difference to denormalising this illicit nicotine trade, and it's going to go a far way to cracking down and protecting Australians.
Laura, the Illicit Tobacco and E-Cigarette Commissioner has said that reducing tobacco excise would do little to stop people purchasing illicit products. What do you think?
I completely agree with her. Criminals selling $10 cigarettes don't pack up and go home because you reduce the price of legal cigarettes. Making all cigarettes cheaper, it will cause more people smoking and more people dying.
Laura, do we know why smoking rates are going down?
Because of sustained investment in tobacco control policies for a very long period of time. And even in that period of time where we have that drop of 500,000 smokers, it's because there has been investment in campaigns. There has been a lot of efforts put into tackling this from the perspectives of the anti-vaping campaign that's been working across the country. And really, it's an ode to the current government's investment in this space. It's also an ode to the tobacco control sector pushing for evidence-based policies.
The government has also announced a ban on nicotine pouches that will come into effect next Friday. What effect will the ban have?
There are a number of legislative loopholes that kind of allow pouches to be brought into this country. Now, these pouches, they're not necessarily those patches. They're actually, they're kind of like little small tea bags, and they're full of synthetic nicotine, and there's also some adjutants in there too, and they're put up in between the gums. I've spoken to people who use these things who have said they've put them in their gums and they have passed out and woken up with blood in their mouth because they're at such a potent hit of nicotine. But what we're seeing today from the federal government is closing off of some of those loopholes so that we don't see these on our street. It's a welcome step, definitely.
Laura Hunter there, the CEO of the Australian Council on Smoking and Health. Well, a little after that, Sally spoke with the Federal Health Minister, Mark Butler, and she asked him for his assessment on what had actually reduced smoking rates. And if you stick around for the end, she also asks him about those comments from Pauline Hanson.
What sort of picture does this data paint on smoking? What do you think has contributed to the lower rates of smoking in Australia?
Well, we know that more than 90% of smokers want to quit, and we've been boosting the resources available to them to help them quit. More information campaigns for the first time in a decade, more ways in which they can get support to quit. So the apps that are now available to help you quit that have prompts that help you sort of resist urges and things like that. Downloads of them have been doubling year on year. They doubled last year. They're doubling again this year. More people are getting prescriptions for nicotine replacement therapy than happened in the past, in spite of the fact there are fewer smokers in Australia. So it shouldn't be any surprise, really, in spite of this explosion of illegal cigarettes, which has been a law and order disaster, that hasn't changed the general mindset of smokers, which is they want to quit and they need some help to do that.
Laura Hunter, CEO of the Australian Council on Smoking and Health, joined me earlier and was talking about people using illicit tobacco. Minister, do you agree that more needs to be done?
Yeah, I do, and I've said that for a long period of time. We've substantially lifted our resources to try and stop these products coming into Australia in the first place. In the last 11 months, I think your listeners will be stunned to hear we've intercepted literally more than 2 billion cigarettes, not 2 million, 2 billion cigarettes coming into Australia, and still these shops are selling them. We're also intercepting record numbers of new products, so not just vapes, but over the last few years, this report talks about the very significant increase in the use of nicotine pouches, these little pouches of nicotine that people stick between their gums and their lips and have sit there for extended periods of time. So there's a lot of effort at the border, but we do need state governments in some parts of the country to lift their efforts. There are some standouts. The South Australian and Queensland governments are widely recognised, not just by us, but by organisations like the one you interviewed, as real leaders in this area. They're shutting down the shops. They're targeting landlords that knowingly lease their premises to people selling illegal cigarettes and other products. But really, we haven't seen the big states come to the party on that enforcement effort until relatively recently.
Let's look at a separate issue now. A podcast conversation between One Nation leader Pauline Hanson and UK far-right figure Tommy Robinson has been published this morning, Australian time. It includes comments from Senator Hanson accusing Muslim Australians of taking advantage of the NDIS. This is what she had to say.
We've got nearly 800,000 on. It's costing us $53 billion now a year.
800,000. Is there any way of finding out the nationality of those people or the origin of countries?
A lot of them are ripping the system off, who are a lot from the Muslim areas, and they're getting on the scheme. But there's a lot of Aussies too, other Aussies, so I'm not just going to pick them out. But it is quite known that in the Muslim streets, you've got quite a lot in that street who are on the NDIS scheme.
What's your response to those comments from Senator Hanson?
Well, first of all, I'm loath to respond to a podcast between Ms. Hanson and this convicted criminal who, frankly, has been disowned by so many leading figures on the right, whether it's Andrew Bolt here in Australia or Nigel Farage himself over in the UK. But I will say this, that I've never received any advice that there's any particular breakdown in nationality or religious background on the NDIS that is different to the usual breakdown in the population. So I'm not sure where Ms. Hanson is getting her figures from, but they've never been provided to me as the Minister for Disabilities and the Minister for the NDIS. I suspect they don't exist.
And that is the Federal Health Minister, Mark Butler, discussing tobacco and nicotine patches, but also those comments from Pauline Hanson. Straight after that interview, we interviewed the Green Senator, Senator Hanson Young, about the Telstra outage, but Sally also asked her about those comments from Senator Pauline Hanson, and here's what she had to say.
Well, I just think this is so appalling, and I mean, frankly, it's un-Australian. And to go overseas, to hang out with a criminal thug who, is a white supremacist, to be laughing on his show about multiculturalism back here in Australia, which we are, our communities, Australian citizens, people who make this country great. And Pauline Hanson is the most un-Australian politician in the parliament. And she should come home, face the music and apologise. And, of course, it's not just Pauline Hanson in this nasty, hatred-driven, divisive stuff that she's been talking with this thug about in the UK, someone that even Nigel Farage won't hang out with. There's also now all of these stories coming out of the things that her other senators believe and say. Anti-Semitic stuff, racist stuff, conspiracy theorists. I mean, this is a scandal that is now engulfing the entire One Nation Party. And it's Pauline Hanson's responsibility to explain, to fess up, to apologise and to get home. I mean, and if she's not prepared to come home and apologise, well, bloody well stay there.
Green Senator Sarah Hanson-Young there. So what exactly did Pauline Hanson say on this podcast? I'm going to bring in our political correspondent, Tom Crowley, who took us through some of the more extraordinary comments made by Robinson and Senator Hanson on this podcast. And look, it's offensive listening. There's no doubt about that. And the claims are being questioned, including by the federal government, as we just heard earlier. But Tom explains just what was said. He plays a few snippets, and he also helps put them into context with some of the previous comments made by Pauline Hanson.
It's about an hour-long conversation between Pauline Hanson and Tommy Robinson, and there's a transcript, or at least a partial one, and had a little bit of a listen over the course of this morning. It was published really only very recently, so there's lots to pick over. I think first and foremost, the fact of doing the podcast itself, as you asked both Mark Butler and Sarah Hanson-Young there, we've been talking all week about what a significant figure Tommy Robinson is for his, I suppose, for being extreme on the right in Britain, as you say, someone even that Nigel Farage doesn't want to be associated with. There was obviously controversy when Karl Stefanovic sat down with him. It cost him his job at Nine for sitting down with him and for not, in the view of Nine, you know, asking pointed questions or scrutinising it all. Well, in this case, Pauline Hanson canvassing a lot of issues with Robinson really just seems to outright agree with him. There's not only any pushback, but actually a lot of affirmation and a lot of expression of similar views, in particular about Muslims in the United Kingdom and in Australia. I'll get to those comments in a moment. I mean, I guess just the context of Tommy Robinson as well is that Robinson's own background, one of the things that he's drawn criticism on recently has been whipping up a story based on absence of fact about a teenage Muslim boy in the UK and directing essentially his supporters to pile hate on this teenager who was bullied. He gets into a conversation with Hanson here talking about Muslims in Australia. He starts with the view, and you play that NDIS clip to Mark Butler there where they end up talking about that, but he starts with this perception that he thinks that Australia, because of its stop the boat policy, might have had a more discriminatory immigration policy, but he is surprised to see that it does not, and asks Hanson specifically about particular ethnic groups coming to Australia. I'll just play the exchange.
How have you ended up with Pakistanis Somalis, all of these African problems with violent Africans. I've seen some crazy videos coming out of Australia. How has that happened when you have such a strong immigration policy?
Well, it started in 1973 with Gough Whitlam. So they opened up and got rid of the White Australia policy. Then they started bringing in the different migrants. We had a lot of people came out after the Second World War. So Italians, Germans, Polish and these people.
So I guess the point there to emphasise, which is fairly apparent, is that it's explicitly racialised. Tommy Robinson listing several nationalities, and then Pauline Hanson suggesting that the problems with migration began specifically with the repeal of the White Australia policy under Gough Whitlam. And so it's that straying, I suppose, having had this debate in Australia about what Pauline Hanson means by a monoculture and her assurance that it does not mean singling out people on the basis of which countries they have come from and their ethnicity, but rather being about values, these comments do not seem to be consistent with that. It goes on as Pauline Hanson then talks about not just her suggestion that Muslim Australians are using the NDIS, which, by the way, is based in, it's a talking point in the right that seems to be based on an utterly fake stat about the number of NDIS providers registered in Lakemba, which has been the basis for this then assertion about Muslims using the NDIS that, as Mark Butler says, he has been presented with absolutely no evidence to that effect. But then she broadly goes on to speak about welfare and discussing with Robinson the percentage of Australians who are of Muslim origin and whether that number might be growing in the upcoming census. And again, I'll play the comment.
What do you do with, so you've got many Muslims in your country who are relying on the state.
You've got about 4%.
You've got 4%?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's more than I thought.
That's a million.
That's more than I thought.
That's a million, but that was in the census, so we're going on a census that's going to happen here in August, so we've got another census coming this year, so it was 5 years ago since the last one.
Yeah, well, that would, it's going to have gone up to 6% probably.
Well.
With the birth rate.
They are having children. Because, you know what, in the Quran it says Allah will provide. Well, the Allah
is the
providing
government
is a taxpayer. Correct.
Yeah, it's all the people going to work
every day. Guess what? I've had enough.
So, again, extremely incendiary comments. I'd suggest going even further in a way, or at least building on an assertion that got controversy a few months ago now, the suggestion that there were no good Muslims. But this is getting even further into, I guess, talking about birth rates gets towards things like great replacement theory and some of the most intense ideological echo chambers on the very furthest right. And I've been making this point throughout the week, when there was some suggestion that Pauline Hanson, with her support in the polls and with one in four Australians indicating in opinion polls that they might vote for her, some suggestion that she would then try to, I suppose, tack towards the middle to attract more mainstream support. I think we can say pretty conclusively from an interview like this, there is absolutely no sign of that whatsoever, and that her trip to the UK has been in association with the very furthest elements of the British right, much further to the right of Nigel Farage. And so that, that is what's reflected in this podcast.
Tom Crowley there, helping us understand some of those comments from One Nation leader, Senator Pauline Hanson, and also putting it into context, comparing them to some of the early comments she's made this year about Muslim Australians. Well, they can't be the last thing you hear on the wrap before heading into the weekend. Allow me to change gears for this last interview.
There's a bear in there. The chair as well.
If you're not a parent, it may have been a little while since you last heard this tune. We're playing it because this weekend marks 60 years of this much beloved show.
It's Play School.
Play School turned Big Ted, Jemima and Humpty into household names, but even more popular was Benita Collings. She presented 400-odd programs over three decades as the show's longest-serving presenter. So we had the absolute pleasure of listening to this chat she had with Sally.
Benita, why do you think that Play School has lasted for 60 years and continues to occupy such a special place in kids' education and Australian television?
Two things. Well, more than that. Talking to the camera as though it's a child. Now, that was one thing that was impressed on us a lot. So you weren't sort of just talking aimlessly out there. It was to a child, not children, a child. And I believe that's how children got it, that you were talking to them. And also the things that we did were for young people. It wasn't like an older person saying, come on, do this. Come on, no, wake up. It was aimed directly at the 2 to 5 year old.
What was it like for you initially? I mean, this model that you're talking about, Benita, of looking straight into the camera and speaking with one child rather than thousands of children, did it take a while for that to feel comfortable for you?
No, funnily enough, it was one of those things that it was easy, and the crew were just fabulous, because if I had been looking down at something, doing something and showing, you know, this, that and the other, and then you looked up and I was looking at the wrong camera, there'd be this wonderful hand coming out of the camera I should have been looking at, pointing. So the crew were very much on side.
Benita, what did it mean to you to be involved in play school for so long, over 3 decades, and to play this integral role in the lives of tiny little Australians?
Well, first of all, they didn't make that many. I think it was only 45 new programs each year. So it's split between a few couples. You actually didn't work on it that often. And as for when you started to be recognised, I freaked initially. I went, oh, my goodness. And then I realised that, hello, Collings, get used to it, because this is going to happen often. And it did. You just were yourself. You know, that was it. You sort of just chatted away as though it was normal everyday language, and it was.
For the grown-ups watching Play School, every now and again there were delightful moments when things were going slightly wrong, or there was one kind of track for the kids and there was something else quite funny for the parents and others watching on. What was it like when those situations unfolded?
Well, you just went with them and you pretended that you were still talking to the child, even though you knew that what you were saying, there was that double edge to it, so that the child got it on one and the adult got it on the other. It was fun.
Play School has taught kids a lot, but what did you learn from being part of Play School and your connection with kids, parents and families over 30 years?
Well, you learnt, first of all, how to behave with a child, a 2 to 5 year old. You know, you didn't just sort of wave them away and forget, think, oh, no, wait till they grow up and then I can talk to them. It wasn't anything like that. You got used to parents coming up to you and say, oh, we watched Play School, oh, this and that. And then this child that they maybe had with them was looking up at you. Heaven knows what was going on in their mind. But you got used to that.
Do you miss it?
Oh, not really, I suppose. Initially I did, when I wasn't asked back at different times. I did miss it then, and now it's sort of like, oh, yes, that was part of my television career, you know, and that's how it was.
Well, there are many Australians who owe you a great deal of thanks. I'm among the generation who watched you on Play School in those early days. Benita, it's so generous of you to come on this morning and share some of those memories. Thank you very much.
Oh, look, it's been fun. It really has. Thank you for asking me.
Open wide, come inside. It's Play School.
And that was Benita Collings having a really wonderful chat with Sally Sara there. Hopefully something nice to give you a smile as you head on into the weekend. It's been a really big week of news. Thank you very much for listening to all of those interviews right across the week on The Breakfast Wrap. Today's episode was produced by Louise Mylan, and our executive producer across the week was Jason Whittaker. All the interviews are produced by the brilliant Radio National Breakfast team, and they will be back with Sally Sara next week for even more. I'm Luke Siddham-Dundon. We'll see you then.